Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, August 2nd, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things going?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So it's August. I can't even believe. I don't know where the time goes, but August really gets me thinking about not only the start of business school for people matriculating, but mostly like, you know, the flurry of activity that's going to happen as people start to write their essays and, you know, deadlines are really around the corner at this point. And so it's kind of pedal to the metal at this point, I think, for candidates who are targeting round one, at least.
Yeah, deadlines beginning of September.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I noticed, I was talking to you just before we came on air, that, you know, you've got Harvard and Wharton on September 8th, and then Stanford on the 9th. I mean, it just starts to really roll. And there's even some early, early action deadlines for Duke, I guess is maybe the 2nd of September. So stuff is just going to come fast and furious as soon as we turn the calendar month to September. So we did publish a chart on the website. Just went up last week. It's just called like Round One Early Action Deadlines. It's a great post though, because it's got everything in one place. You can kind of see how the schools all line up and when the deadlines are. It'll probably give some of our listeners a little bit of a heart attack when they see how stacked everything is, but you know, that it is a useful tool. So I recommend people check that out.
Why do you think schools do that, Graham?
I don't
know. Why are they all together?
I don't know. I mean, I think, well, some of it is, you know, just they do want to get decisions out before Christmas. So they have a certain amount of time to play with. And, you know, even these schools with the early September deadlines, they're not issuing final decisions until usually, you know, early to mid December. So it's, they need, you know, they can't wait too long. Although, and now I'm going to put my foot in my mouth, but I'm pretty sure MIT is going to be camped out later, which they always do. Yeah, there they are at the end of September on the 28th. And they managed to get their decisions out before the holidays too. So I don't know.
It looks like Anderson take the entire month of September off. They're not starting till October.
Yeah, that's right. The other thing that's interesting though is that if you think this is sort of stacked, you know, it's almost usually worse in round two, where all the schools sit right after the new year. So yeah, it is what it is. I guess everyone's got to get their, you know, files read. And I will say one of the things I love about MBA admissions is that at least the schools really read your file and do so usually at minimum two, if not three times, cover to cover with different readers. And that's actually not true in some other, graduate programs where there's often like a formula. Like if you don't make the cut on like GPA or test score, you know, it's a pretty quick read and then, you know, they just move on. So it takes time. So the schools need that time. But yeah, as a result, they all have their deadlines pretty early here and stacked. So let's talk about, there's this piece of news that came out literally just before we came on air as well.
Yeah, I hear Wharton's the second top school to hit parity with female matriculants. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I know someone said they're the top school, but I got to throw out a hat tip to Marshall.
Yeah, USC Marshall in 2018 announced that they had hit parity. I think they had 52% women in their class. And Wharton has just announced the same figure, 52% women in the incoming class for Wharton this fall. Wharton, I guess, would argue they're the first, you know, kind of a top 10 school to pull this off. But yes, they're not the first. USC did it a few years ago. But it's cool to see, you know, and it's, I guess it was bound to happen. I think there are more women in undergraduate, you know, institutions than men. So it was bound to happen. And it's nice to see it happening because business school, when I went, it was like 30% women.
Yeah, it is absolutely fantastic. When I was at ADCOM, so we're talking through and up to 2005. If you hit 30%, 31%, 32% women, you'd done very well.
Yeah.
And then it just seemed like there was a step change and that moved to 40%, 41%, 2% in the last maybe 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But what Marshall and Wharton have done, yeah, hats off, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, very cool. And the other thing I just wanted to point out is that, you know, last year, because of the pandemic, Wharton's international student figures plummeted. I think it was like 18 or 19%, which is very uncharacteristic. And I wanted to report that because they shared their class profile, and shared this news about women, the international figure has jumped back up. I think it's, you know, I don't know, 36, 38%. It's a much higher number. And I think, again, most of that was due to them granting deferrals and things to international students who literally could not get to campus. So they're back on track there. The other big news is that, you know, we continue to publish essay tips and, you know, deadlines and recommendation questions for all to see on the website. So there are a handful of schools like Babson, Indiana, Vanderbilt, Rice, that have all been posted over the last week or so, Georgetown as well. So check out the site for that. And then I don't know if you've had a chance to listen, because as we record this, I think it's just gone live, but we published a podcast interview that I conducted with Chad Losey, who's the director of admissions at Harvard Business School. That was a lot of fun to sit down with him. I'll tell you a funny story about this though, Alex. I'm interviewing him, and we have this question about, like, what do you like about your job? And he, you know, Chad had really amazing things to say about, you know, all the people he gets to meet. And it's true, like, when you're sitting in that seat, the kinds of candidates that you interact with and the things they're doing all over the world, it's just so diverse and cool. Like, you just constantly are discovering new things, much in the way that I feel like we get to do on this show, right, where we profile candidates. But then I said, what do you not like about your job? And he says, I don't like doing these kinds of interviews.
Nice.
I mean, he said it more nicely than that, but I was like, so then there was this sort of awkward, like, uh-oh, where do I go from here? You know? But anyway, he was really great on the show, and I encourage everyone to listen, and we had a good time talking through the admissions process at Harvard. So very good stuff. If you're applying there, it's a must listen type thing.
Yeah. He does seem like a very impressive individual.
Yeah. Cool guy. I think those are the kind of housekeeping items for this week. I think we can get into our candidates. I did want to mention, you know, we don't have any events now. We just finished our last essay kind of insight, but we will have more of those in the fall. So I know everyone who's joined us for those really enjoyed them. And so stay tuned. There's kind of more news to come there. Alex and I will be on Clubhouse once again at noon Eastern on Thursday. So join us there if you actually want to talk and interact with us instead of just listening to us ramble on as you do on the podcast. And then, Alex, one other thing is we got an email from a listener who writes, "Hey, Graham, Alex, just wondering what platforms you prefer reviews on. I've been listening to the podcast for over a year and have garnered fantastic information and confidence in my application strategy from it, but I'm unsure of how to best leave a review. I typically listen to you via Spotify, but they don't have a review section that I'm aware of. Thanks again for the fantastic podcast," and that comes from somebody named Brett. So Brett, first of all, thanks for writing to us. I think I did shoot you an email, but you know, it's a good question. And I think, first of all, Alex, I don't know if you know this, but I'm baffled that Spotify still doesn't have a review engine for their podcasts, but they don't. So you can't review the podcast there. Most of our reviews have come in just on Apple Podcasts. So if you're able, that's the best place to leave a review. The other thing I was telling Brad in the email I wrote to him was just tell people about the show. I mean, that matters a lot too. So tell anyone you know that's, you know, applying. Just spread the word. That's all we want to do, and just make sure everyone can tune in and hopefully get some insights. But yeah, very cool to get that feedback, Alex.
Yeah, and quite odd that Spotify hasn't added that feature and functionality yet, but I assume they will at some point.
Yeah, I'm sure. So let's get into our wiretaps portion. Obviously, if you have questions or you see something on wiretaps and you want to talk to Alex and I about it sort of offline, you can always email us. Just email info@clearadmit.com and use the subject line wiretaps. But yeah, Alex, let's move on unless you had anything else you wanted to discuss.
Let's kick on.
All right. So this is wiretaps candidate number one. So this is a candidate who wants to start business school in the fall of 22. It's an apply wire entry, and the candidate is targeting Carnegie Mellon, Cornell, Northwestern Kellogg, NYU, and UCLA Anderson. This person has been working mostly in fintech and payments with a more recent stint in data science. They want to get into tech after business school, specifically fintech. They'd love to work at a place like Stripe or Square or one of these kind of mobile payments type companies or mobile wallet type stuff. They have a GMAT score of 720, GPA is a 3.35, and they've been working for 4 years. They're located in Manila in the Philippines, and they start off their kind of notes to us saying, "Hey guys, really love the work you've done here." And then they go through a kind of background on their jobs. Alex, I'll kind of stop there because they have a lot that they shared, and I know that you exchanged with them on the site, but you know, it seems like they have strong extracurriculars. Maybe we can get into that, and they've had a pretty good career to date, but they're kind of wondering about, do they have the right target schools? They really want to focus on kind of tech-oriented, you know, programs and stuff, but what do you make of this candidate?
Yeah, I'm wondering if this candidate's underselling themselves a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things, the schools they listed are very good schools, obviously, and have that sort of technology focus. But then I suggest, well, maybe add Haas and even Foster to the list if a tech focus is what you're looking for. And they were like, do you think Haas is a bit of a reach for me? And I'm like, well, maybe it is a reach. But if you get admitted to all the schools you apply, then that's a poor strategy because you probably haven't reached high enough.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I think Kellogg is probably considered by many folks at least as strong, if not stronger, than Haas anyway. So Haas is more oriented towards tech, and it's, you know, right by, you know, this, it's in that sort of Silicon Valley area. So absolutely add Haas to the list. You know, from a numbers standpoint, they're not like out of this world, but they're doable, right? A 720 GMAT by any standard is within range of all the top schools, maybe just a little bit below the average, but certainly within range. The 335 GPA, I believe it's an engineering degree. And, you know, clearly, I think they've done quite well, actually, even though it sort of translates and looks a little bit lower than average for admissions to top schools. They were very active during their undergrad, and, you know, as a student leader, and they're still active, I think, in mentoring and so on and so forth, which is, that's going to be important. That sort of mentoring side of it sort of nicely balances out what looks like to be really solid, if not good, work experience, sort of spinning through three different jobs, somewhat related. And as you said, Graham, before we came on air, if they're sort of packaging themselves as a fintech candidate, and that's their goals and aspirations, their work to date sort of works to that story, I think. So at the end of the day, Graham, I think this candidate is quite realistic in their ambition here, and could ultimately be a pretty strong candidate.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And yeah, I was saying to you earlier today that I feel like if they can really play up the kind of mobile payments, global wallet or whatever, global payments, mobile wallet, sorry, if they can play that angle up and maybe even have their goals kind of wrap around that, which it seems like that's what they want to do. Yeah, they kind of come from an interesting angle. They're in the Philippines, which is not something you see every day. I think the numbers are good. And I want to just read you something that they shared with us in one of the notes, which is they said, in terms of class rank, I graduated in the top 15 to 20% of my course in management science and industrial engineering. Only one third of the batch that started ended up graduating due to retention requirements. So this is a fairly common practice overseas. I'm pretty sure this person did their degree probably in the Philippines. I'm not certain, but you know, where literally they kind of cull the herd every year. You know, they kind of just drop the bottom of the class. So you know, I think that GPA will have to be viewed through that lens. And they mentioned, you know, that they started in the first year with like a 2.7, just barely hanging on. And then by the end, they were had sort of a 3.5, 3.7, you know, in their final year. So I think there's an upward trend. This person's clearly smart. They have a story to tell. Outside activities sound interesting as well. And yeah, I agree. They should target, you know, I think, you know, Foster and Haas could be good ones to add. What did you make of the idea that they were thinking of doing a one-year, you know, kind of like Cornell Tech MBA or Stern Tech MBA? Do you think that makes sense for this candidate, or do you think a full-on two-year program is better?
I mean, it's possible. Obviously, these sort of more specialized MBAs might sit right in their wheelhouse. I always think, though, if you've got long-term ambitions, if it's about growing a business and you really need to know the fundamentals of sort of being that sort of global entrepreneur, as it were, then the two-year experience might well be the way to go. And I do like their long-term goal is to return to the Philippines and become part of the development of what's more of a nascent industry. So to me, that adds value. They also have this their own sort of retail startup business that they've been playing with. I mean, I say playing, I think they've done quite well with it. And that sort of really sparked their idea that they want to be, you know, switch roles to sort of front office facing stuff. So frankly, Graham, I think if they work hard on their story, they've got a lot to offer. But yeah, I'm not sure I exactly answered your specific question. I managed to waffle away and avoid the answer, Graham.
No, I think it is an interesting quandary. I guess part of me, I agree with the principal point you made, which is if they want to be really versatile and do big things down the road, then sometimes a traditional MBA may be the best path because it'll give them a whole host of skills and not maybe be hyper-focused. But if they know what they want to do and they're looking to get in and out fast, and you know, obviously some of the one-year options that are very tech-focused might be of interest. And certainly, you know, they can look at the placement. And I know the Cornell Tech MBA has this amazing campus in New York, and there's a lot of good things coming out of that program. So in any event, great candidacy. I agree with you overall that maybe they're underselling a bit. They have a unique story to tell, good career focus. And so I want to thank them for submitting the entry, and I wish them the best of luck. And they can obviously keep us posted. Feel free to provide additional color as they travel through the process. But yeah, best of luck to them.
And of course, it goes without saying, even though I think they might be underselling themselves a little bit, it's no mean shakes getting into Tepper or Johnson or whatever. So they're going to have to, put their best foot forward to gain admissions to those programs. It's not like they can just say, oh, they said this is easy, I've got to aim a bit higher. So make sure that they do put their best effort into all these applications, which I know they will, but I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Sometimes we sort of take that for granted that someone's going to really, work hard on the essays and get everything in perfect shape. So
you don't think that they need to do an MBA math or anything like that, right? Just to shore things up?
I don't think they need to. No. That wasn't my takeaway from this profile. I know that I think one of the other ones we're going to talk about today, that may be the case. But no, not on this one. I think they're okay.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is another ApplyWire entry that we received. Again, the candidate's targeting start date of fall 22. They've got CMU, Columbia, Cornell, Dartmouth, Duke, Georgetown, Harvard, Kellogg, Notre Dame, NYU, Stanford, Chicago, and Wharton on the list. So that's just in case you're keeping score at home, that's 13 schools that are on the current list. They indicate that they have a GRE score of 325. They have a GPA of 3.18. They've been working for 7 years, located in New York, and would love to stay there. They indicated that their GPA is a bit of a lower GPA because they had a couple of failed courses that they basically they didn't hand some stuff in, and they basically were given a zero in the course and stuff. So they were running a business at the same time. So they have an excuse for kind of what happened, or an explanation, I guess I should say. In any event, that's kind of the academic background. This person has, they co-founded a real estate brokerage and oversaw over $1 million in yearly revenue for a couple of years. They also built a kind of real estate tech app, which they, started from scratch and launched and managed a team of 13 to kind of get that off the ground. The app apparently has a couple hundred thousand users, et cetera. So they've had a lot of interesting kind of real estate oriented success. I did also want to mention that from a personal standpoint, I'm going to have to find it here, but if I remember correctly, this candidate is actually, they are Swedish. So they speak, Swedish. They obviously speak English with native fluency as well. They have some Eastern European roots, and I'm not sure the whole story, but it sounds like one parent is from the Middle East, and maybe the other is from, Eastern Europe. So, and they're living in New York. So they have this kind of interesting multicultural background and speak a lot of languages and have traveled extensively. But Alex, what do you make of this person? Because they asked some questions about, they sort of should I go part-time, full-time? Maybe if I go full-time, I should do 1 year. So where do we start with this one? Because there's kind of a lot to unpack.
Yeah, that's a very good question, Graham. Where do we start? I think this candidate has done some incredible things all over the map. So that's the quandary.
Yeah.
It's whatever they've turned their hand to, it looks like they've been incredibly successful. whatever they've prioritized, it looks like they've been incredibly successful. And I think I read, and I was just trying to find the reference as you were speaking, that they've also won $2 million in playing poker.
Yeah.
They were a professional tennis player. I'm like, crikey, what haven't they done? But you mentioned that they failed a couple of classes and it was due to they had other stuff going on. Well, that's a problem to me. That shows lack of prioritization and so on and so forth. So, and I'm sure maybe they've learned from that experience because, again, they've been incredibly successful and subsequent and so on and so forth. But I would sort of look at that as potential learning opportunities and sort of make sure that they've grown from that and don't just use it as an excuse. So you write the optional essay in terms of why you've got these couple of Fs, but you absolutely show how you've learned from that experience and the importance of prioritizing and so forth. Because I love so much about this candidate, but they are all over the map. Where do we start? I mean, they've got 13 schools on their list. They're not sure if they're applying full-time, part-time, 1 year versus 2 year. They're about 150 years old, Graham, so they need to know this stuff by now. I mean, I exaggerate, but they're in their early 30s, I think. And I do think they did their undergraduate degree in somewhat of an unorthodox fashion. I don't think they did it, you know, at the 18 and 19 to 22, 23. Otherwise, my maths is all wrong. So they probably need to explain that a little bit more. But if they can really come together with a cogent story and a really good sort of narrative and show some of this growth and learning as a result of prioritizing, I think a big school is going to like this candidate, Graham. Why not? Even if it's just to ride on their coattails and play a bit of poker with them or something like that. I mean, it's crazy what this person's capable of doing. With the right guidance, this person is an impact person, no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, and I think I'm actually not sure how old they are if they said, but you know, you point out like they have like 7 years of work experience and they may have graduated from university a bit late. So it's very possible that they're 30 or something, right? So this is an interesting case. I mean, they seem to have goals in tech and entrepreneurship, and that's where their, you know, clear track record is. I don't know if the real estate stuff still factors in because the companies they listed wanting to join are Amazon, Apple, and Facebook. So I think they want to pivot, but it's unclear exactly. They did leave a lot of comments on their post here. But I agree. I mean, the GPA is a bit of a red flag for me, and the GRE at 325 is solid for sure, but somewhat average at top schools. So it's not like it's a 330 plus that's going to just blow the reader out of the water and say, whoa, okay, I'll take note of this. And clearly maybe there were some circumstances around that GPA. This is a smart person. So it's, that's the part that I sort of struggle with is, can they get by?
Just to let you know, Graham, they're turning 34 this year.
Okay. So you found it in the post. Yeah. So they're older. Yeah. This is tricky. I mean, the other thing that I struggled with is, you know, not all the schools on their list have part-time offerings. And, you know, some of them might have an executive offering, but this candidate is probably still a little shy of the mark for an executive program, or it's tricky because they're not in a traditional role. Mm. You know, it's hard to argue that they're like sort of a senior manager at a big company or something that's going to go off and do an EMBA. So it's tricky. And then you get into the 1 year type options, which are, you know, we talked earlier, there's Cornell with the tech MBA, or Stern has some specialized 1 year offerings. Beyond that, you know, you have Columbia's J term, but that's not really 1 year. It's more like 16 months. And you have Kellogg, but that's reserved for people, quite frankly, who, you know, studied business undergrad and did well and are recent undergrad graduates, because the whole idea in doing the accelerated Kellogg MBA in 1 year is that you've done the sort of core coursework as part of your undergraduate curriculum, and it's really recent. Once you've been out of school for a while, they don't really want that. And I think they even explicitly state that you have to have graduated fairly recently. So that's out. I turn then to Europe and say, well, okay, you know, there's obviously INSEAD, Oxford, Cambridge. These are all programs with short form, you know, 1 year style offerings. There's some others like LBS and HEC that are, you know, can be anywhere from 15 or 16 months, you know, to a regular 2 year at LBS if you want, you know, depending on how you run through it. But yeah, it's tricky. I feel like this person needs to still do some soul searching about what they want. But I do agree with you that there's a lot here that could be really appealing. From, you know, beginning a kind of short career as a professional tennis player to earning $2 million in winnings in poker from age 17 to 22 to kind of fund their college. Like, there's a lot here that's interesting. And then obviously, you know, real, I would call this person like a serial entrepreneur. You know, they've just done a whole bunch of cool things and in sequence. So I don't know. I mean, this is a tough call, but like, what would you tell this person? Like, where should they apply? I mean, do you have a strong point of view on like full-time, part-time, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say it, but this person really probably would benefit with working with a consultant.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I mean, I've not said that about any candidate we've ever discussed on Wiretaps.
That's fair.
So, again, this guy is all over the map. They're crazy good, but they need to have a cogent story, especially if they ultimately end up targeting M7. They would be an outlier in the pool for M7 on some regards, but absolutely, they've done some things that the majority of candidates that successfully go to M7 programs haven't done.
Yeah, I agree.
So I'll leave it at that. This candidate is fascinating, but needs guidance.
Yeah, I agree. And I know you've never said that before. And I think I was thinking about, you know, how does this candidate even do what we would call a personal inventory? Like, there's so much. So they need to wade through that and see what rises to the surface and what should sort of shape the messaging in their candidacy, because they need to weave this stuff together somehow, you know, at least the career stuff, you know, and a set of goals that makes sense. Because it can be hard for a 34-year-old to get into a very top program and simultaneously like reinvent themselves with respect to a career plan.
They made 400 grand a year playing poker.
Yeah. You just did the math on that. Yeah.
And that took me 10 minutes to calculate.
That's why you haven't made any money playing poker.
That's exactly right.
So no, but in any event, I think, yeah, this is, there's a lot here. I do wish this person the best of luck. And I think, you know, they provided some great additional detail.
Yeah.
Again, I think you're right. They could go, maybe not M7, but they could go to a top 20 MBA program full time. They probably have to apply to a number of them.
I think they could walk into a top 16 program.
Yeah, but they need to get the right strategy. That's for sure.
If they get their strategy right, M7, that's my sort of, like if I was doing a you know, weighing your odds type show or whatever, that's how I would look at it.
Yeah.
But, you know, They made 2 million playing poker for a few years. Yeah. Use a little bit of that money and get professional guidance, because it could pay massive dividends.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not familiar with any of those weighing the odds type programs.
Alex. No, I'm
I don't
not.
Know what you're talking about. All right, so let's move on though. I want to thank that person for their profile and for, you know, they responded to a bunch of questions that I posed to them. So again, appreciate that post.
Yeah.
Let's move on though and talk about Wiretaps candidate number 3. So this is a candidate that is actually targeting the fall of 2023. It's an ApplyWire entry that we received, and they've got a whole list of schools as well. They've got Berkeley, Carnegie Mellon, Columbia, Cornell, Dartmouth, Georgetown, Ross, NYU, Rotman, Foster, UCLA Anderson, USC, and Yale. So I think it's 14 schools there. They are currently working as like a project engineer. They'd love to sort of stay in kind of a tech role, working in, you know, maybe auto or aerospace, as well as just traditional tech after business school. And they have a list of companies that include, you know, Hewlett Packard, IBM, Lenovo, Apple, Google, Tesla, Uber, etc. GPA is a 3.27. This person's got 3 years of work experience, and I think they're currently in the U.S., but they're going to be, at the time of application, they will be back home in Hong Kong or potentially in the U.K., and I'll explain why in a moment. They would love to land in New York or on the West Coast after business school, and, you know, basically the issue this person has is they went to undergrad in the U.S., but they're originally from, I'm guessing, Hong Kong or somewhere in East Asia, and they are on a kind of OPT you know, work experience. So that means you have, they have 3 years or so to work in the U.S. and they haven't won the H-1B lottery or anything like that. So they know already that this time next year, they've got to relocate back either to Hong Kong or they apparently have family in London that they could go to as well. So that throws a little bit of a wrinkle into their strategy, and they asked us some specific questions about that. But before we sort of dive into that, I just wanted to read a little excerpt that they shared, and they wrote, "Hi guys, just wanted to start off by saying I absolutely love the job you guys do on the podcast and here at Clear Admit. I've been binge listening to the podcast for the last month and really appreciate the time and care you spend on each Wiretaps applicant." So Alex, I guess we can't shortchange this one. We're gonna have to discuss it in full.
Yeah.
No, but what do you make of this? Because they have an interesting quandary, and they were asking us specifically, like, okay, when I go back home in summer of 22 and then begin the application process, what should I be doing?
Yeah.
You know, like they were asking about that because they have a whole year to fill before they would start school, but they're going to be in a new market.
Yeah, no, this is a very interesting question. And quite frankly, I think in the comments, I might have misunderstood exactly what they were asking. So my guidance might have been a little off. So it's great that we get a chance to talk about it and make sure that we're all clear. So it seems to me, Graham, and correct me if I'm wrong, that they're going to spend another 7 or 8 months in the US working. Then they're going to have to relocate either back to Hong Kong or to London or whatever. And they're applying for then the following season. So they're going to have maybe 6 months in out of the US during the application cycle. So I'm kind of assuming that timeline based off of what we discussed before coming on air and sort of reading between the lines. So what I would suggest for this candidate is in the next 6 months or however long it is that they're remaining in the States, if they can reach out to their boss or whomever and get placed on challenging projects. So I think that was one of the questions they asked. What can I do for the remainder of my OPT time to maximize my chances? So if you can be proactive to get placed on aggressive projects or more challenging assignments, then to the extent you can do that, just get it done. Really challenge yourself, really push yourself so you can get maybe a really strong recommendation from your boss at the end of the day. You're going to learn more and so on and so forth. And then similarly, whatever sort of extracurricular activity and volunteer work that they're involved in now, to the extent that they can ratchet that up, that would be fantastic. So, and that's standard advice to anyone applying to business school.
Yeah.
Right. If you know you're applying to business school, you know your boss is going to be friendly to that opportunity for you, then be proactive and ask your boss to put you on really challenging projects and so on and so forth. Then the point comes, they relocate back, either back home or to another market or whatever, and it's a short period or a shorter period of time. It might be more challenging to get full-time employment, but if they can get it, you know, the other issue to face is, well, they know they're only going to be in it for 6 months, so is that worthwhile, and so on and so forth. So they've got to deal with that situation, and you could talk to that a bit more, Graham, because I think you are more inclined that they should pursue that potential path, or alternatively, seek out some volunteer non-profit work that falls in their wheelhouse, something about which they're passionate. So they're not just, you know, biding time and treading water, something they're truly interested in, but doing something that's meaningful over the next, that sort of several months as they're going through the application process. On top of all that, I think they're going to do MBA math or HBS core or something just to sort of round out their numbers as well as acing the test. That would be fantastic. So I'll leave it at that, Graham.
Yeah, and you actually raised an important point because they have not yet taken a test. They do indicate that they're going to take the GMAT and that they're a strong test taker and they anticipate 730 plus. So obviously that would only, further bolster what at this point is a pretty strong candidacy. I mean, they have, they're going to have a several years of work experience in the U.S. They went to a top 30 undergraduate school in the U.S. and they studied mechanical engineering. So that 327 is, a decent GPA, and you couple that with a strong GMAT and the academic profile comes into view. This is an international student, and it's, I think, It could be me, but I do think there's a little bit of bias in terms of like if an international has actually come to the US and already done undergrad and performed well, it's like just an extra little vote of confidence in their favor in terms of being able to, you know, excel in an American sort of academic environment. So that's a good thing. I do feel that they're going to go back next spring or summer. And wherever they go, I think, you know, given that it's still 1 year before they would matriculate, I would start by looking for a job. That would be my first priority. And obviously, if they can't find something, then taking the volunteer route or something could be fine. But remember, they state that they're kind of on the engineering side of things and they want to go to business school in order to move to sort of the business side of engineering. So I don't know, maybe there's a first step towards that that they could seek out in a role. But that would be the optimal thing. Or, you know, it could be as simple as they say, look, I've just taken a new job, relocated, but I'm still an engineer and I really need that MBA to kind of pivot into more of a managerial role. But I think they need to try to find work, and it'll be hard because the employer that hires them, you know, I don't know if they're going to be upfront about it, but you know, it's kind of a 1 year stint before they would then head off to business school. So that may be challenging. Let's see where the job market is. I did want to put you on the spot, Alex, and ask you a question that they posed in their notes, which was they were kind of wondering if they are an underrepresented minority or an overrepresented majority, right? So they were like, oh, if I move to the UK, does that make me underrepresented? Because I know we've talked in the past about how candidates from Europe are sort of underrepresented. But what do you make of this? This person, let's assume they're from Hong Kong originally or somewhere in East Asia. I mean, what do you think? Are they overrepresented or underrepresented?
I think they should assume they're overrepresented. I don't think it matters. I mean, they can't influence that, so they should go in the application process, i.e. apply in the first rounds, do all the things you would do as an overrepresented candidate. Now, getting an experience in London might sort of further sort of show their geographic diversity and sort of professional experience in different markets. That can obviously add value, but that doesn't change whether you're ORM or URM or ABM or whatever it is, right? So, if you think getting an experience in London is going to add value to your set of experiences and so on and so forth, do it. Don't do it just to try to change whether you think ADCOM's going to look at you through a different lens, because I don't think that's going to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that when they first mentioned this idea of going to London, it did seem appealing to me in the sense that they could sort of spin a, you know, whatever, maybe born and raised in Hong Kong, undergrad in the US, work experience in the US and London.
Yes.
Like, as you say, it starts to paint this kind of global citizen sort of background. But I recognize, you know, it's easier said than done maybe to, you know, land a job in the UK or something. So obviously, I think they just have to go where the interesting experience might be for them. But and I don't think that if they apply from London, that somehow makes them an underrepresented minority. I think they, as you say, go into it assuming you're overrepresented, apply early, et cetera. But this is an interesting candidacy, and I think they seem to have a good head on their shoulders. I mean, they're already, clearly they do because they're sort of a year out from application and they're already thinking about this stuff and getting their ducks in a row. So I think, you know, obviously securing a really strong GMAT result will open doors and allow them potentially to pare down this list because it's a really long list of schools. They could pare it down towards the top end if they do hit that 730 plus mark. But yeah, overall, lots to like here, I think.
Yeah, no doubt. And obviously, you know, if they've been binge listening to this podcast, they've got to be a smart person.
perhaps. So in any event, thanks for picking these out as always, Alex. And I think we've done it. We've made it through our three profiles for this week. And I'm happy to connect with you next week and do the same thing again. But thanks so much, Alex, for all your help on this, as always.
Yeah, very good. Best of luck, everyone. Stay safe.